Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Rochelle Hunt.
So this Sunday is International Women's Day, and if I'm honest, it's a day that I've kind of grown a little cynical of. I started to feel like it was a day that had just been hijacked by corporates, by workplace cupcakes, and by asking women to speak or to volunteer for free. No real discussions or plans for, I don't know, equal wages or ways to reduce violence against women. But then last year, I decided, Rish, turn this frown upside down. I decided to flip it and to change my attitude because, hand on heart, I realised how many incredible women I know and love, how many women I respect, how many women look out for me, and how many women I would go into battle for. And I now thrive on female energy, especially when we stand side by side. And I don't know about you, but I've felt a shift that now we speak up, and we speak out, even if that gives us a label of being difficult. And we talk about things that maybe once in society they thought we shouldn't talk about. And now we just say, bad luck, baby. And one of those women, a warrior, a woman who makes me want to be a better woman to other women, a woman who makes me talk about things that we shouldn't talk about, Dr. Jacinta Parsons.
And in fact, you're calling me doctor. We've been quelled. Stop it, Jacinta.
Rochelle Hunt. Yeah.
Do you know what? I love you. And this is going to, for some people, this makes them feel ill, all the love. But I feel what you just said then is actually, I think, the heart of all of this going forward. Because this week I've been really cross doing a lot of stuff around the intersection of gender and health and disability and all the intersections that actually then play into that class, culture, everything. And angry because it is absurd what we are still fighting for as women. And we kind of have become not complacent but oppressed enough that it feels like, it's too hard.
It's overwhelming.
It's overwhelming. And it's like there's so much going on in the world. And then, you know, you sort of feel like we were battered so much about being a feminist or talking about women's stuff. We are only recently fighting back against that, you and I, about we've made a half hour of radio that we do at 11:30, although you're leaving me and that really hurts me, where we made a commitment that even though we have been pushed back a lot, being women, talking as women might, we
as
thought,
women do.
As women do, some
in
women,
reality.
I don't know how reality you and I are, but
yeah, that's true.
I do think, but for so long, and you know, I could go on and on about this because I studied radio as well, and the work that you and I do has fitted into a very particular mold of what was created by some wonderful men, but it became the trope.
Yeah,
and for us to be here and then talk about women's stuff. Often gets that pushback.
I love that you called it women's stuff because that's how it's been labelled forever. Oh, women's stuff. And we do, that pushback has become less and less, but it actually propels us forward. And one of those topics is, of course, menopause and perimenopause, which is going to be the focus of today. So as a society over the last, I don't know, let's call it 5 years or so, it feels like there's been a really dramatic shift in let's talk about it, let's understand it, let's get the medical fraternity on side, get them understanding it, let's have it all out in the open. But then it's come almost to the other side now where it's like, okay.
Had enough now.
Well, a little bit of that. Yeah. It's a little bit, here we go again, talking about menopause, here we go again. On top of that, I think we've catastrophized menopause to the point now where women are scared they're going to lose their jobs, their husbands, their libido. They're going to sweat every part of their life.
Stuff happens. I'm not going to tell you about my personal life, but it is a very diverse outcome. But that's what, sorry, what happens though is that when we make something something and when we think about women as one big lump of human and we don't understand cultural, physiological, all the things that play out your body is very different to this kid's body over here and how your hormones work and, you know.
So not only do we not understand them ourselves and there's still – and that is a lifelong lesson and you need people by your side to help you with that, people who are informed, people who are educated, people who specialise in those areas, two of which we have in the studio to take your calls today, 1-300-222-774. Look at me go.
I'm so proud of you. I can't believe you know how to do that as well.
I know. It's – you'll get it one day.
One day, yeah. I will.
But on top of it, what happens is, so not only do people go, oh, I'm sick of talking about it now, aren't we finished talking about it? We get minnow-washed. We get sold
what?
Too.
That sounds like something that happens to a whale, the minnow, you know?
So
anyway,
it's
what's
green,
meadow-washing?
It's greenwashing, but menopause washing, because we are trying to
what
learn.
What does that even mean? I forget about that.
So if
you get take sold.
You get sold snake oil.
Yeah.
You know, take this and you'll feel better. Yeah.
Don't even get me started because it's all like aging and women, particularly like the woman and her arc of life isn't ever really understood as a fulsome story, you know, where we go through really different stages and we are at the stage, and you know I talk a lot about aging and women, where, you know, that idea that we're correcting something that's gone wrong, what the? That is so deeply enforced in our culture that it's very hard for us not to participate in that, because if we don't, we are treated in a way that is like, well, you're a little bit fuddy-duddy and you're not really looking that hot anymore and all
and
of this stuff.
And don't blame menopause for everything.
No.
You know, I love it when you do the pointy business at me.
Yes, this week.
So that's okay. And you know what? It's not because of your hormones. It might be a little bit, but it's okay to be cross, and it's okay to be fed up, and it's okay to speak up, and it might be your hormones or it may not be your hormones. 1-300-222-774. Today is an hour-long special. Oh. It is my last conversation hour for a while.
And this one says, time to turn off the radio.
Oh, well, maybe
you know
keep
what?
It on.
You turn it off.
We'll keep talking.
Yeah. It doesn't actually stop happening, but that's okay. I think autonomy and choice is very important. Look, yes, did you finish saying what you were going to say?
I don't even know anymore. But
put the whole number out. I don't
think
you did that.
Yeah, 1-300-222-774. We have people who, and women who specialise in this, who live and breathe this. We want your stories. We want your questions. Our number's 1-300-222-774.
I wanted to tell a story.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Rochelle Hunt.
And Jacinta Parsons, your co-host this morning, a couple of days out from International Women's Day, we thought it was time to dedicate today's program to perimenopause and menopause. It's something that we talk about more now. But as we get better at talking about it, where do we take it next? Sitting alongside you, Jacinta Parsons.
Hang on, I want to tell my story.
Oh, I've got to tell your bloody
story. This is not appropriate to tell an endocrinologist or a CEO of Jean Hales, okay?
All right, tell me.
But this is my positive story about International Women's Day.
Yeah.
I've told it before, but it's such a classic.
Yeah.
In my car, I was doing a U-ey of sorts.
Chucking a U-ey
on my kind of side street so that I could then turn left and park on a busy road. So lots of cars come down there, but it's chill. And, you know, you'd usually do a U-ey and someone would go, yeah, you pop in there, that's okay. No, when I was doing the U-ey, this car comes screaming up to make sure that I couldn't U-ey. And this man wound down his window, not like that, but probably electric, and screamed at me. He used a word that was rude. You are a, and you are a woman. You need to be in the kitchen where you belong, right?
All right.
But this is what came over me. And
what
I
did
was
you
like,
do? Did you get
how
out?
Can we be constructive?
What did you do?
I said, okay. We're screaming at each other in cars here on my street. So everyone was like, whoa. Okay. If I am in the kitchen, what would you like me to cook you? Right? He immediately, without pausing.
Says bangers and mash.
No. Oh. Strangely, he wanted a chicken stir fry. He screams at me, chicken stir fry. And I then yell back, but do you want noodles or rice? To which he said rice. And I thought, I don't know if I respect you to have you stir fry with rice.
Oh, no, that's good. I mean, there
anyway,
I'm actually in agreement.
That was what it is. And I got home then and told my probably 13-year-old, it wasn't that long ago, And he said, I know this is really inappropriate, but I really feel like chicken stir fry tonight now.
Happy International
Happy
Women's
International
Day.
See, we can get along. Let's move on.
Dr. Sarah White has been sitting alongside you listening. Do you know what you signed up for, Sarah White? As the CEO of Jean Hales for Women's Health, when the two of us get together, things get a little bit crazy, so I just want to prepare you for that. Are you okay with that?
I have listened to you before, but I'm starting to see the true extent of the madness now that I'm actually in the studio
it's
and I'm a little
safe.
Bit scared.
It's not safe.
I can tell.
Yes.
So much has changed since our mothers and our grandmothers went through menopause. A, it didn't get spoken about. B, they were probably just sent off to have hysterectomies without it even being discussed, a part of it, or truly understanding why. How much have you seen the narrative, dare I use that term, change over the last 10 years?
Oh, it's changed significantly. And I think it's probably only 4 to 5 years because we've seen Gen Z get onto social media and say, no, no, we're not actually doing this in silence anymore. We're going to share our stories. We're going to demand better. We're going to talk about it. And that's been extraordinary, such a change.
Can I ask you why you think that change has happened with that generation? Is it because the ones that have gone before were on the tipping point of that, I suppose?
I think social media helped it happen because there was a platform. True. I think we're more used to sharing and we're less used to being quiet about women's health more generally. But I also think there were a lot more of us in the workforce. And so we were now, compared to our mothers, there's a lot more of us in the workforce dealing with the hot flushes when you're standing up talking to people or the loss of the words when you're doing a meeting.
We did a little chat in Alfred Hospital actually yesterday talking about very similar things about gender equity and the health system. And what was brought up was something that the guest said, look, many of you in the audience will have had mothers who had to leave or were fired from their work when they became pregnant. And actually at the end, a woman put up her hand and she said, my daughter's 46 and when I was pregnant with her, I was fired on the spot. Mm. And in terms of that history not being that far away, that culture not being that far away, I think is really an important reminder.
Absolutely.
That the changes are still happening on that bed, on
well,
that foundation.
Well, I remember my mother telling me that when she got married, she stopped getting superannuation as a teacher. Mm. You know, that wasn't that long ago.
And this is where, I'm on a pony and I'm riding it hard, but this is where the issues around superannuation and women who have largely taken on caring work, which is sort of outside of what we're talking about, but part of the pressures is it has meant that we are now seeing that homelessness epidemic rise in the over 50s because of that lack of superannuation.
Absolutely. And if we're talking about pressures at midlife, to Rish's point at the top of the show, actually, we're getting a lot of those financial difficulties hitting us at midlife, that pay gap over the years, the time out for children or other caring responsibilities has resulted in less superannuation. And when you get to midlife, it's no longer an abstract thing that you are going to have to rely on this superannuation. And those financial pressures are at their peak too.
And when we think about those peak periods where women have been stereotyped and lost work or not hired, so are you of, you know, childbearing, you know, age? What age are you? Are you too young? And now, you know, menopause comes into it as well, into the workplace. Dr. Sarah White, CEO of Jean Hales for Women's Health, is with you. My name's Rochelle Hunt. Jacinta Parsons is your co-host. Let's have a chat to Louise, who's out and about. Hi, Louise.
Hi, how are you going?
Really well. Thanks for calling. What do you want to share?
I've gone through menopause recently and I've felt I had a male doctor who was more concentrating on my other ailments and didn't ever touch on menopause. And I feel like it was sort of lost. And I've come to the end of the ailments and gone, hang on a minute, nobody's ever dealt with it. Am I meant to be doing something?
Mm.
And it was, and also the bulk billing situation because I was being bulk billed because we're not a high income. I always felt like I couldn't ask any extra questions. So I do think that my male doctor was not keen to touch on it at all.
Wow. Did you end up finding another doctor, Louise?
I'm in the process.
Yeah. I am. And Louise, I think, and we'll probably have this conversation endocrinologically. Is that a word?
I think that's
a word. Is that a verb?
That.
Yeah, you're in that. Because what, Louise, that we have not done anywhere near enough insight into is the impact of hormones on health and wellness, like, and how some of those diseases or issues manifest as a result of the overlay and the underlay of hormones.
Yeah, Louise, we wish you all the best. Stay with us. And also, too, there's looking back and hindsight and thinking, oh, actually, maybe I should have asked this, or was this to do with perimenopause or menopause? Sitting alongside Dr. Sarah White, CEO of Jean Hales for Women's Health, is Dr. Sonia Davison, endocrinologist for Jean Hales Medical Centre. When we talk about how far we've come, Sonia, with just society talking about it, whether it be a generational shift, whether it be older women's shift, where does the medical world sit? I mean, we just heard there from Louise saying, I don't think my doctor really cared or understood. Has that changed?
We are getting a lot better. We were really good at treating women, looking after them. We got de-skilled after a really big hormone therapy study got released in 2002, and women's health sort of hit the skids. Menopause was also taboo. We weren't talking about it. We were invisible. But Sarah and I have done a really good job.
Good on you for saying it. Stand in the light. Let's celebrate.
Our working lives have been about educating GPs, women, radio announcers.
We're all still learning. And it's okay to you're not actually going to know it all because it is still evolving.
What is really interesting about that GP question, though, and that there is the beginning of that education, but largely we are still with a profession that hasn't had much training in the impacts or even being able to actually isolate that potentially it could be menopause that's creating certain outcomes for women.
The really good news is that menopause is literally hot at the moment.
Is
so
it?
There's a
hot
lot
right now?
Of interest. There's a lot of TikTok, social media. So women really, the studies have shown that women trust their health practitioners for advice. They'll get it on TikTok, social media, emails, whatever. But in the end, they'll go to their doctor.
The other thing that I find, and I'm going to have a chat to Catherine in Geelong, because I think she's going to be in, well, not in a similar ballpark here, but lots of questions around treatments to take. Everyone else is taking it. Should I be on it? I remember someone asking me just recently, so what hormone replacement therapies are you on? Are you on HRT? You know, and what supplements are you taking? Like, it wasn't even up for question. And I was like, oh, I don't think I'm not taking anything. You know, that idea of be careful where you get your advice from.
We're definitely seeing advice coming out on online channels, which is really about selling things like supplements. And so much of that advertising, the minnow washing, or as we also like to say, the hot flush gold rush, is about saying,
who came up with that?
Like that one.
The meeting said that? Because they got a raise, didn't they?
They sure did.
KPI woman, probably not. No,
I have stolen that from someone. But the hot flush gold rush is around, you know, the is a $24 billion medical market in menopause, and it's going up 5%. But the wellness is $33 billion.
That's because we're desperate, right?
We're desperate, but we're also cashed up. And a lot of marketers.
Are we?
Compared to what we used to be. Hey, not for profit CEO, not that much. True. But where we used to be, we're working, right? So these people are saying, I've got something that can solve your problem.
Catherine's in Geelong. Good morning.
Good morning, ladies. Thank you so much for the topic and the opportunity to share my story. I'm 52 and absolutely high perimenopause peak, and working in a senior executive job, I needed to take some time off because I wasn't coping, and went to a women's health specialist, went onto the HRT, which I'd read lots about, heard lots about as being my, you know, ticket out. But I'm epileptic and I'm heavily medicated for epilepsy, and it caused me to have grand mal seizures.
Oh, wow.
So I can't take it. So any hormone is off the table for me. And as a result, I've made the decision to stop working.
Catherine.
But financially, I was okay to do that, and it was the right thing for me to do. But I do find it difficult listening to all of the podcasts and reading all the material, and they all talk about the silver bullet being the hormones, but it's not available for everyone.
There's a real movement at the moment, and again, there's good and bad to this in terms of talking about HRT, dispelling some of the myths that were there years ago. But also, Catherine, I feel like there's a bit of a wave at the moment of just go on it. Why aren't you on it? Everybody should be on it. And it's not like that for everyone, Catherine. How hard was it for you to get information and to know, I mean, to figure out that it wasn't right for you, you sort of had to go through the ringer.
Well, yes. As I said, I went to a women's health specialist and was very quickly put onto the hormones as being the right solution. But it wasn't until 6 weeks in that I started having seizures that we went, oh, we can't do that.
This is really interesting to me too, Catherine, and this is where we'll bring Dr. Sonia Davidson in. Because when you said epilepsy, they both kind of recoiled from the microphone. What concerns me is surely that is known information, particularly for a menopause specialist, to be very cautious about the prescription of HRT. Where have we gone wrong there?
It just shows how tricky women's health is. There's an individual in front of you. You need to consider her medications, her past history, and you really need to know them. I just really love to be a fly in the wall in that consult. There's always a way to treat symptoms that are bothersome. Always. There's always an option, whether it's hormone therapy or something else. And I'm very sneaky and I will always find that way.
Is access equal? And good Catherine, question. We wish you all the best. Thank you so much for calling through. Have a great International Women's Day, Catherine.
Thank you.
Yeah, see ya. Love you.
So there's...
I do.
She loves everyone.
No, I don't love everyone, but
oh, that's
I love...
true.
You know what?
I don't love rice or noodle, dude.
I do. Wow, I found a love.
The someone wants a T-shirt that says rice or noodles.
That's the question of life. But I guess when I say that, and I, you know, say it ridiculously, but really the point is I feel so... There's so much empathy for a woman who has made a choice because she could, but ultimately it was not because she had decided that would be her best life choice. It was a choice made as a result of unmanaged symptoms for something that potentially we should be managing.
Access and availability isn't equal. It could be financial. It could be geography as well. Peg's in Merbeu North, which is in a beautiful part of South Gippsland. And it says, good luck to the women who are broken, who live in rural areas, getting any help in a hurry. When we talk about steps forward, where does equality of access come into this?
Telehealth. So that's a really brilliant way to access a doctor. It is really tricky, but we are educating GPs. There are lots and lots of different GPs who are interested in women's health. If you look at the Australasian Menopause Society, there is a Find a Doctor webpage, and that might be one way of getting access to someone who really might understand you and your health needs as a woman.
Dr. Sarah White, CEO of Jean Hales for Women's Health, is with you. Dr. Sonia Davison as well, endocrinologist at Jean Hales Medical Centre. My name's Rochelle Hunt. Your co-host this morning is Jacinta Parsons. We are talking all things perimenopause and menopause.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Rochelle Hunt.
And we are talking perimenopause and menopause this morning. We have guests in the studio to take your calls, take your comments. And also, too, if you're through the other side and you look back and you just want to share a little moment, a little pearl of wisdom, Kim in Mornington says, I'm in my 60s and all of my friends and I now have taken to raising chickens. We now call it henopause.
Oh, you got to stop it.
I love that.
No, I love that.
Jackie's in East Gippsland. Good morning, Jackie.
Hello, Rochelle. Thanks for taking my call. I'm really like to bring up grief alongside menopause because the symptoms often collide and especially when I'm feeling quite upset and then the hot flushes just come on and your heart rate's up and, yeah, it just... They just collide all the time and it's really hard to keep your head above the water sometimes.
And Jackie, I don't know about you, but I think I'm transitioning out of peri into menopause and my emotions are, I'm crying at the drop of a hat and I'm so, so emotional at the moment. And then if you put real-time grief into that, are you okay?
Well, I suppose not actually.
Yeah. You know what? No. And so brave to say that because other women are listening to you right now and going, you know what? It's actually really important to say when it's not. All right. Jackie, are you the artist?
Yes.
Yeah, I know you, babe.
You know everyone.
I know Jackie because she called and she used to bring us joy. We're talking about all the art. Is that something that you're still doing is something I want to know through this period?
It's actually my sustenance. It's a time for me and I can just quietly think and go about.
Oh, Jackie, you know what? You have raised something so important because, and I was talking off air with other women about this, is that perimenopause and menopause happens at a time when all this other stuff is happening in our Whoa. Lives. Our kids are either growing up or moving out. Our parents are getting sick or dying. Big stuff is happening in our lives and we are going through grief at the same time of going through these huge hormonal shifts. I don't know who wants to take this, ladies, but how do we recognise it? How do we manage it? How do we help people through
it's the caring health practitioner at the end of that consult. It's hard to find them. Sometimes GPs have 10 minutes to say hello and goodbye and to deal with your essential health needs to keep you happy, healthy, and to give you a good life in older age. So if someone is caring at the end of that consult, just try and find a caring health practitioner who can assist you with that pathway.
And on top of that, I think it's really important to recognise that there are all these things happening. We actually call it the midlife collision.
Mm-hmm. So The sandwich generation,
mm-hmm. all of these things colliding. So I think actually recognising that and being kind to yourself, maybe delegating some of that emotional labour that you're carrying, just getting the people around you to understand
and
that.
And taking time out, paints.
Absolutely.
It's okay to sit on the couch
totally.
And do whatever, do nothing. Totally.
And it's actually really important to say, I am not coping under the situation that I found myself in. That is really important to say out loud for those around you and for yourself. I'm interested because, do you want to go on? Because what I'm interested in is hearing Jackie and, you know, that you can hear that grief.
Yeah.
We're hearing from other people today that a lot of the maybe HRT, which is really the conversation that we're having, is not suited to everyone and not really answering some of those questions. But you said there is an answer and there is a solution
for
everything. How do we advocate and navigate when we don't know what those answers
are? And we don't even know the
question?
Well, I've just been involved in a menopause working group and so has Sarah as an observer. And there's some really exciting things coming about. So watch, this is the year of the horse. We'll be galloping away with some good women's health stuff. But we are looking at ways to engage with the community. But also you can't forget about the Jean Hales website. So have a look at our beautiful website. Have a look at the Australasian Menopause Society website. Just get involved with some good quality information and advice because all of the conversations are on those websites.
Can I ask a really tricky question that's come through the text line? Is Jean Hales bulk billed?
No, it's not. It's a private billing clinic.
How do we go about that? There are any ways for people who are on low income who need this support to actually, and this is not a criticism of Jean Hales because you're bound by.
It's a wider conversation around access.
Yeah. How do they find you?
So what we're really focused on doing is trying to get that clinical expertise from our clinics across Australia. And that's where we're focused. We put a lot of effort into the health information online. We put a lot of effort into educating health professionals. Sonia does a lot of training of health professionals as well. So our goal is perhaps to use those clinics to recognise or understand the issues coming from about 10,000 women a year. Wow. And then we try to get that clinical expertise out. But we recognise, and I hate it, that we just can't afford to do bulk billing. Or our consultations are quite long. Medicare does not cover the cost of those consultations.
But it could if government was prepared to
actually really
put the money in.
We really need to restructure Medicare so that those longer consultations that are needed by so many women are covered.
We would save so much money and time.
We would save money. Yeah. We would save money.
I want to bring Professor Susan Davis AO into this conversation, clinical researcher at Monash and Alfred Hospital. Professor, you've been listening to this. I mean, let's actually pick up off that. Like, do we need to look at Medicare? Do we need to look at access for women so that there is equality in service?
Well, firstly, there is access for women at the moment. Monash Health has a menopause clinic. We have a menopause clinic at the Alfred Hospital in Melbourne, which is free for everyone. The Royal Women's Hospital has a clinic.
Okay.
But as of the 1st of July, the Alfred supported, Bayside Health supported by the state government, is opening up a clinic that will be embedded in the community, that will be supported by three general practitioners, two endocrinologists, and allied health nurse practitioner, physio, etc. So that will be starting from the 1st of July and be available to all Victorian women.
Is that a physical clinic or a virtual?
Absolutely physical. We really do prefer physical clinics. Of course, we are able to offer virtual appointments for women who either have health issues who can't physically attend or are remote, but the best care is always, if possible, face-to-face. But that clinic is opening up in July this year. Very exciting.
It is really exciting, but you cite, you know, three GPs and two endocrinologists, and we've got this enormous population. Is this going to be a proof of concept? If this goes well and we see, you know, will that this be rolled out into further spaces?
It is a proof of concept, and ideally it will be rolled out just like the endometriosis clinics have been.
Right.
But in addition, the idea is also that the GPs will rotate through and go back into their own practices. So it won't be, say, three GPs who are there for the next 5 years. They'll spend ideally 6 months there and have learned from the experience and then go back.
And then filter that in, and we create this snowball effect. Stay with us, Susan, because Himmel's called through, and this was a question I was asked today in the office. So, Himmel, I am so glad you're asking it. Good morning.
Good morning. I love your program, by the way. Thank you.
Oh, we love you. What's your question?
My question is, so I have a partner and a very dear friend, both in their mid-40s, are at perimenopause. And I was wondering, as a man and a partner, what I can do to support her.
Mm-hmm. We've all got an answer for you, Himmel, but we should probably just give it to the professionals.
Well,
but it's a really important question to ask.
Yeah, because sometimes as a man, I find it hard to navigate through the different emotions because they can change so rapidly sometimes. Yeah.
And we have to talk about this openly. Like,
that has to
be an open conversation.
Because sometimes there might be a bit of irrational rage, you know, and you can't say, Himmel, as sometimes I do to my husband, if he says, what's annoying you? I'm like, it's the way that you are breathing right now is driving me insane.
Yeah, but then it was the 20 years of, yeah, I know.
No, because actually it is just the nostril breathing sometimes that's driving
Brian
me nuts.
Brian does that too, just by the way.
Yeah, anyway.
And that's what I really would love to understand so I can be more supportive.
Well, yes, but at the same time too, I think I need to recognise that it's my hormones and emotions and that it's okay if my husband breathes through his nostrils.
But it's an interesting tension because I think, you know, we were talking about this off air, sort of that anger that kind of comes about in this middle years is often really about systemic stuff and sort of seeing ourselves more clearly in a system. And so the rage is just sort of underneath the surface.
Susan, as someone that has researched this, and when we talk about women understanding, okay, let's go with rage, but then not blaming hormones for everything at the same time. What's the difference between speaking up and speaking out for yourself or being driven by your hormones and then how society reacts to that? It all gets a bit murky and messy, Professor Susan Davis, doesn't it?
It does. And we see that, I guess, when you have sleep deprivation, when you have mood swings up out of the perimenopause, you find that things that you would normally deal with very rationally suddenly become overwhelming or make you agitated. So I think recognizing the emotions you're experiencing and then trying to stand outside yourself and say, okay, normally I'd deal with this. So maybe, you know, learn to walk out of the room, take a deep breath in the room and calm down with it. But also, in terms of the male partner or the female partner, I think having the open conversation, being supportive and saying, I recognise sometimes this is overwhelming and you actually respond to me in a way you can't control, but maybe you need to, you know, it's like when you've, don't scream at the kids, take a deep breath before you scream at them.
But you need everybody in that household to have a sensitivity and education around what that is so that there can be authentic support for this and not stuff that
builds. Yeah, but at the same time, you can't, excuse my language here, you can't also just be an arsehole for the sake of it.
No,
you
know? No.
I think you've got to recognise, yes, this is hormones, see it in yourself and think, do I need to walk out of the room here? Am I going to look back on this when my hormones settle and think, did I act in an appropriate way or not? And not shifting it to someone else all the time.
Yeah, I think that's actually really important. We all get angry, right? I've got a teenage son. I want to throttle him sometimes. Yeah. I do have to leave the room with the same right GP. But I also think it's a really good time. Himmel's already well ahead. He's really thinking about the people around him. But the whole family can get together and go, hang on, is it mum who's organising the lunches?
Yes.
Mum who's organising the shopping, doing the...
So now you're actually overwhelmed.
We're totally overwhelmed.
So you should have been the whole time.
Take some pressure off mum.
This is what I mean, because you're really poking this bear inside me, because I think that what happens is actually a reaction that is probably a little bit more fiery than it would normally be, but not divorced from reality.
At the same time, I had a chat off air today where there were women who have gone through perimenopause and menopause and went, oh, wow, I left my job or left my husband and now I look back on it and think,
okay, that's
true. Could have been another way.
There could have been another way. Susan, is that something that your research has, I guess, looked into of what we can learn from those who have gone through it?
And that's what we're doing at the moment. We're doing very large studies. I have seen a phenomenal number of women over the years who have all this stuff piling on top of them, but they can't let go. So I've said, well, you've got two kids, you know, who are adults now. Why don't you get them to make dinner twice a week? Oh, well, yeah, but they can't cook.
Noodles
and then
or
I'd
rice.
Have to eat it. Like, okay, tell them to make dinner twice a week and let go. Mm. If it's not done to perfection that you'd always like, giving permission to yourself that your role of being the nurturing person for the last, you know, 20 years, you can pull back and let the kids make very bad quality bolognese and pasta. And
I've become very comfortable with toasted sandwiches, you know, once or twice a week. Just finally, Susan, because we know how busy you are, you've been doing a lot of research of late on testosterone, and my Instagram feed is full of testosterone influencers at the moment.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like women or men?
Both.
And non-gender, I should say, non-binary. Yeah.
So what have you looked at, Susan?
So testosterone is absolutely the flavour of the month, and particularly in the US, it is people have gone crazy demanding testosterone from their doctors. So the bottom line is the only available evidence is that testosterone can improve sexual well-being in women who are postmenopausal and who have experienced a loss of sexual interest. We're currently recruiting perimenopausal women to a study of testosterone and sexual function in the Monash Women's Health Research Group based at the Alfred. So any perimenopausal women who are interested should just Google Monash Women's Health Research and contact us.
Look out.
Can I ask a really quick question about it? Because I wonder if, I mean, I'm not just speaking for a friend. I feel like my testosterone has actually increased through perimenopause for the all
okay,
that. Not true?
Change.
Not true.
No.
Why am I behaving in the way I am is my question.
hormonal fluctuations, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, testosterone
we'll talk
blood
off
levels.
Need to find out. Yeah, sorry.
Testosterone blood levels do not fluctuate and they do not increase or decrease across the menopause. Estrogen levels fluctuate, and our research has shown that the peak of symptoms, the anxiety, the mood change, the low mood, the hot flushes, all peak in the late perimenopause, and that's because of all this fluctuation.
So what will the test, I'm going to ask a really stupid question. So if you're going to, say, increase or if you're going to look at testosterone levels in women, how do you do that? Like, is it a cream? Is it, do you, or how do, what do you look at?
So we in Australia, there is an approved testosterone cream for women, which is a skin cream, and it's absorbed through the skin and restores testosterone levels to those like young women. We don't treat women because they've got a low blood testosterone level. We treat postmenopausal women because they've experienced a loss of sexual interest and would like that to go back to how it was previously. And as I said, we're looking at perimenopausal women at the moment because there's no data on that.
And how can people get involved if they would like to reach out to you, Susan?
The easiest thing would be to look up Monash Women's Health Research Program and you will find everything on our website.
Professor Susan Davis, AO, Clinical Researcher at Monash and at the Alfred, thank you so much for your time and your insights. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for speaking with me and including me. Thank you.
Thank you. Also sitting in the studio alongside Jacinta Parsons, Dr. Sarah White, CEO of Jean Hales for Women's Health, and Dr. Sonia Davison, endocrinologist at Jean Hales Medical Centre. Testosterone is kind of, it's having a moment at the moment, really, isn't it? We've spoken about menno washing and information that's out there. And I've got women on my reels putting testosterone cream on their
arms.
There's
been studies done, though, hasn't there? In the UK, am I right to say that there's been some work on testosterone that was looking hopeful?
You've done a lot of work into it, Sonia, haven't you?
I have. Well, our testosterone levels halve by 40. So they're a peak at 20 years of age in women, half by 40, they hit the skids at 65. And women really, if they're looking at testosterone, want to go back to a female level. But unfortunately, there's a lot of abuse here. Mm. They might get a male product. They might get something on the internet. They might go to male levels. And then we're looking at potential irreversible side effects.
Like
voice deepening and enlargement of the clitoris.
Is that good?
Well, it might
be. Not necessarily.
I'm not actually joking.
If you're transitioning another gender, yes.
Okay.
But if you're a normal female in this, what if you use your voice for radio or singing? Mm. That's a disaster if your voice has deepened.
No, it's actually great for our patriarchal world.
What is appropriate for you and not?
Need to find that beautiful, caring health practitioner. The three words are do no harm, especially with testosterone use in women. There's some beautiful information at Jean Hales. There's a lovely two-pager at the Australasian Menopause Society. Look at the stuff at TikTok, but then go to the trusted information and then talk to someone who absolutely knows about prescribing this.
Julie's called from Ocean Grove. And Julie, you are singing from my songbook. What would you like to say?
Look, thanks for this conversation, and I find it very interesting. I'm 72 years old, so it's a little bit of a dim distant past for me. I feel that what I really want to say is in all the information that we have everywhere about menopause now and in the narrative, the danger is in catastrophizing.
Yeah.
As if the other side of it is, you know, a terrible loss of everything. And, of course, as a lot of women my age will tell you, it isn't. You know, it's actually a wonderfully freeing to be on the other side of menopause. And to
it's so true. Don't catastrophize it. It's not saying it's not emotional, it's not difficult, that we still haven't got a long way to go, but at the same time, it's not the end.
No, and actually Julie brings up a point that a lot of people speak to, is you actually have a really great sense on the other side of it, this newfound confidence, you're not worrying about fertility, you're not worrying about periods. Like, a lot of women really talk about as if they're coming into this strength that they've not had before. And we also have to remember that one in four will have a really difficult time through menopause. One in four will have no problem at all, and the rest is a bit of a sliding scale of symptoms. So it's not bad for everybody.
I won't say, because it'll take us down another pathway, but we fought for so long to be heard. And for me, it feels, I get a little anxious that we're already asking us to kind of moderate potentially the experience. It needs a diversity, but I, you know,
But you do have to be careful though, right? Because otherwise, otherwise that's when workplaces start to go, oh, right, is someone in their 50s really difficult to work with? Because you're not having really educated conversations around it. And some women will go through menopause unscathed, like nothing, right? They're absolutely cruisy. So if we don't, if we blow it up into this thing of, oh my God, they're going to be like these crazy angry monsters and they're going to be all foggy and
gendered
want to kill
ageism,
me.
Gendered ageism is an issue in our culture. So we really need to be careful not to other midlife women. And there's also good research to show that women who approach menopause, who are worried about menopause, do have a worse outcome because they're really heightened sensitivity to hot flushes and challenges.
And agreed.
So we've got to be careful
about...
It's
that education piece, though, isn't it?
It's about making sure women know where to go for information
and that your
but not scaring them.
Understands that if you are going through something like this, that it is... Well, I actually wanted to bring up something else as well. When I was in Greece, when I was in Greece. What a preamble that is. Whatever. Yeah. Shut up. Yeah. That was a story about farting.
Is that when
in
you
Greece.
Farted? Yeah. She farted on the beach in Greece.
Anyway.
Blame long menopause. Story. Can't control your farting.
I never have been able to. IBD, babe. Anyway, what I was really fascinated to hear was that women that I knew in Athens, etc., had a gynecologist assigned to them from when they were children.
Oh,
like when
really?
They first. Yes. And so this is something also really important is that arc of the woman that is related to probably how she might have actually responded to hormones going through menstruation.
Could you imagine having a gynecologist for life? That's unbelievable. The same person.
So birthing,
yeah,
menstrual, our health, and then, of course, menopause.
Pap smears, everything.
Everything that relates then in your knowledge of that body that we want from our health practitioners is embedded in that relationship.
How does Greece do that?
Call Greece and see what they say.
When we look at, throw this in at 10 to 12, of when we look at our healthcare system and whether or not any kind of menopause or perimenopausal treatments are even available on Medicare, and then you talk about having a gynecologist for life, will we see that in our lifetime?
We will not see that. We can't sustain that. And what if you get a bad gynecologist for your lifetime? Then you're in a lot of trouble.
I know, but I think having options.
Having a beautiful GP who cares for you.
Again, though, we keep saying that, but where are they?
We are training
them
up.
We're so feisty today.
If you see me at a menopause conference with 700 very eager people in the audience just wanting to get it so right for women, you would be thrilled and you would be clapping 24 hours of International Women's Day. I can tell you that now.
This question, if we didn't get through all of your questions on text, apologies. We'll try and answer this one, though, by the end of the show. Is hair loss and brittle hair a side effect of estrogen? So we might answer that in just a moment. Dr. Sarah White, the CEO of Jean Hales, is with you. Dr. Sonia Davison, endocrinologist, also at Jean Hales, is with you. Jacinta Parsons and
Hi.
Michelle Hunt. Hello. And as of Monday, sitting in this chair here, keeping it warm for you for the next 8 months or so, while I pop into the breakfast program, is none other than Mary Guerin. Mary.
Hello.
Welcome back to our family.
I want to standing ovate you.
Yeah.
Hello, I am clapping. I have been loving this conversation. I've just been behind the glass here just cacking myself. The testosterone line, I love that.
I feel like I've dialed
and the
up.
Clitoris line as well.
Don't her talking about clitoris.
I'm very uneducated.
So, Mary, when we talk about going through menopause, how it impacts our lives, you know, don't catastrophize it. I mean, this is something that's close to you, yeah?
I'm about to turn 58. So, I know. I feel like Julie, your caller, said, really lucky. I hear terrible stories, like you say, that needs to be said then, that my experience is part of the spectrum of experience, but that doesn't mean anything about anyone else. Yes, my body shape and weight has changed and that's been fun, but just generally otherwise it's been okay. I think my line is that I've probably had menopause personality right from the get-go. So I haven't really had to.
So cute. You adopted it at 12.
I did. I think I did. But the thing that I've also really seen, and I've been looking at the texts as well and everything that you've touched on, that when you're in your 50s, you have all these other things going on in your life.
Yeah,
and what I feel is a real gift of this hot flush, hot topic, resurgence in talking about menopause, it's a gateway issue to talk about all the other stuff
absolutely.
In women's lives in particular, but all of our lives potentially in your 50s.
Absolutely. And I think we are totally getting better at that. Let's have a chat to Megan in Ballarat. Megan, we've kept you there for yonks. Good morning.
Morning. How are you?
Good. What was your question?
Just inquiring about rosacea.
Rosacea and menopause. Yeah. So and rosacea, menopause. Red. Yes, I think I had that too. Good question.
It can really increase because of the flushing and sweating around menopause. So our skin temperature is literally, even if it's not hot, we're feeling it as hot. And some of those hormonal fluctuations in perimenopause. Again, getting to your good GP, getting to a dermatologist, there are some beautiful treatments for rosacea as well. And with the hair question, yes, our hair will change as we age. We'll usually do what our mums do. And lots of things like treatments are very important as well. Sun damage.
How do you go bleaching your hair because I bleach mine too.
Look and going how short to, my hair is.
Yeah, mine broke off. I bleached it in the normal way, and all of a sudden just went, ooh, that hair shouldn't
be on the bathroom floor.
Yes,
that's a lot of it. Yeah,
there's a lot to hair though. Iron deficiency can impact, thyroid can impact. It will change with menopause. It will change with hormone therapy. Again, talk to your good hair practitioner. Mm. That's what you should do first for hair.
Is that a cost? Hairdresser?
Your hairdresser.
My hairdresser hates me.
Get a good hairdresser.
Because he doesn't like what happens to my hair.
Come with me.
Thank you.
I'll tell you
what
to do.
I'll cut your hair.
Can you actually?
No, I can't.
I can't. Terrible. I would let you.
With chicken scissors?
Chicken scissors is how I like it done.
They're not sharp enough, though.
I love that feel.
I want to see this on Instagram.
Yeah, you don't. It's pretty dangerous. So a couple of days out from International Women's Day, yes, as a society, we are talking more about perimenopause and menopause. Just finally, where do you see the next stage? What's the next milestone that we will get over or not?
Well, we're pretty good tackling the education. And we're getting better at hormone therapy and menopause. The next milestone would be just trying to get GPs remunerated, I think, for seeing long consults. And then
making access
the bulk
easier.
Billing would work. A GP does not make the money they need to survive bulk billing. People just need to know that. They can't cover their overheads. So I think that would be the next milestone.
And I think probably where we're going is really positive in that we've opened the door with this menopause discussion. We've started to look at the data and said it's not just menopause. There are all these other things we have to look at. The caring load that's falling on women, what can workplaces do to ease that a little bit? How do we shift some of the domestic load, the emotional labour? I think it's actually going to be a really positive time. And back to some of those questions around cost too, we've just had a government that's put quite a few menopause hormone therapy products on the PBS, so that's cheaper. Mm. Yep. There are menopause clinics that are being set up around the country. So I think we're actually making progress.
Dear Rochelle, please stop calling your program the Conversation Hour. It's always the Feminism Hour. Well, that's a good thing, isn't
well
it?
Well done. I'm proud of you and what you've done.
Thank you.
I think this is from a fella. Hi, ladies. I feel a standing ovulation
would have been
very nice.
Appropriate. Oh, nice. So as of next Monday, as I set my alarm for some ungodly hour and step into the breakfast program, filling in for Chanel Valla while she takes maternity leave, Mary Geeran, a warm welcome to the Conversation Hour. You are going to have a blast.
I am. I already am. I'm loving the audience. I love these texts. I want everyone to join me and tell me how I can become a little bit more like Rochelle Hunt.
Don't say that. You'll be in a hell of a lot of trouble if that's the case. Dr. Sarah White, CEO of Jean Hales for Women's Health, Dr. Sonia Davis, and endocrinologist at Jean Hales Medical Center. Standing ovulation.
Can I just say on behalf of all the people who go through this experience, thank you for your work, because you've been pushing it for a really long time, not just the last 10,
but a life's work
that makes a difference for all of us.
Thank you.
And chicken or rice?
Well, I got noodles.
Noodles
chickens at home, so I'll have to be the eggs.
Now, Miss Jacinta Parsons, can I say thank you to you for, like, you and I just hanging out, talking about things that, quite frankly, most people don't talk about on the radio, let alone two women
talk about on the radio. I interrupt. Your ferocity and your wonderful, like, your mongrel, which I, okay.
Is that standing ovulation?
Go,
is
go
one of your finest traits. You know how I've done that before, where I said, who could beat me in a physical wrestle?
Me.
You're the only one on the floor that I reckon would go too far.
Because I pull hair, scratch.
Yeah, you don't care. You just want to win.
Mongrel.
I appreciate so much that you have done what we've done over the last year and a bit, because, you know, it's not to everyone's liking, and we're doing it because we really believe in changing tone and stuff. And I really love what a sister you are in the world to other women as well.
Woo-hoo! Right back at you. Mary Geeran will be in the chair for the Conversation Hour as of Monday. For the next 6 or 8 months or so, I'll be on Breakfast with Mr. Bob Murphy.
Yes.
Have a wonderful International Women's Day. I'll speak to you on Monday, bright and early.